Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Vandal Biz Talks podcast. I'm your co-host, Connor Zeff, joined by my fellow co-host, Landon Cotan. And today we have a very special guest for you guys. Lori, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Lori Rock, and I am in the role of Marketing and Communications Manager for CBE.
Great. I mean, let's just start things off. Lori, where are you from? And if you could tell us, like, walk us through kind of like your career and things like that.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of from the Pacific Northwest. I was born in Colorado, moved to Washington State and stayed there for most of my life and went to school. And then I worked for Boeing after I got my undergraduate degree in business. And I started off in accounting and I did that for a while and then got into organizational development, which was all about people, which was fascinating to me. And then I got my master's degree in whole systems design. That's WHOLE, like the full system. And I learned about people systems, which was fascinating to me. So I lived in the Seattle area for 10 years or so and went back and forth between there and here. Over here on the Palouse is where I spent most of my growing up years. And so I worked for Boeing, and then I did some nonprofit work down in the LC Valley. I worked for the Northwest Children's Home, and then I ended up working for Lewis Clark State College briefly. I did fundraising for them, and then I ended up back in Seattle and started my own company after I got fired. Sometimes these things happen. I worked for a creative agency then for a while. And the gentleman who ran the agency started raising prices on customers, like overnight tripled prices, and didn't bother to pick up the phone, but rather just sort of sprung it on customers, which taught me a lot about communication. And in the process, a lot of business went out the window and I could see the handwriting on the wall. I'm like, I better make moves toward the door. And that's when I was starting to take a look at doing my own thing. And at the same time, I parted company with that creative company. But that's where I learned animation. And I've always thought in pictures. So ever since I was a little girl, I have been a visual thinker. I have a brother that's 2 years older than me. And I realized that Don, who had a lot of special needs growing up and needed a lot of extra support for school, et cetera, was one of my best teachers. And so I skipped a grade and Don was held back a grade. So we ended up even in grade school doing our homework together. And I started drawing pictures to help my brother as he was encountering sometimes concepts or new material that was very foreign. And so that's when I started drawing and sketching. Both my mom and dad were always very visual. And so Don helped me develop some of the visual communication skills that I ended up using later in my life. And at a creative agency, and I got into creating animations. And those whiteboard stories where the hand, this was popular probably about 10 years ago now, where the hand would rapidly draw the pictures. And then we went into digitizing that and moving beyond that. But I found that I just love helping people understand concepts that sometimes are elusive or hard to understand. And so being able to simplify it a little bit and bring it to more visual medium, I found really useful for me too. I'm totally a kid at heart. And so being able to add a little humor and even just simple graphics can really help people understand things. And so that was kind of how I got the start of my own company called Big Idea Zoo. And the idea behind that was, you know, ideas are all around us, like a big zoo. And so how do I help customers get a hold of an idea and communicate it? So that was how I started my company while I was in the Seattle area. And then a couple years ago, decided to make a change and come back closer to home where my mom is. She lives in the valley, not too far away from here. And my partner, his family was in the valley as well. So we decided to come back over. And that's when I reached out to one of our staff here, George Tanner, who I had done some, he's an entrepreneur at heart in every way. And I got to know him because my parents were entrepreneurs. And so they had reached out to U of I years ago to basically look for free help as they were creating ideas. And so George had some students working on a couple projects, and that's how I very first knew him years ago. So when I knew we would be moving back over here, fall of 2022, I reached out to George and said, hey, we're moving back to the area. And he wanted to know if I'd be interested in bringing some of my industry experience into the classroom. And so that's how I got started. And I think you, Landon, were in, was that fall of 2022? I think that was my very first class I ever taught. So you and others really taught me how to be an instructor. So it was students that, and their feedback that really helped inform me as an instructor, which I found to be such a wonderful process. I learned so much. And really the design process is getting that feedback from your target audience. And so I learned along the way and got to bring the industry experience. I worked for Boeing for 10 years. I did forget to mention. Did I say that? Maybe
yeah,
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I'd had a lot of, you know, the Fortune 5 company experience, and I got to help write employee handbooks and policies and procedures. And I was in a role of bringing feedback to managers who didn't always want to hear it. Conflict resolution, a lot of tricky things in those early years. And so getting to bring all of that kind of experience to the classroom in 2022 was a big blessing for me and brand new. So that's a little bit how I initially arrived. So I was an adjunct instructor. And then I started teaching yoga because I've been teaching yoga for 20 years. And I do that because it's a great balance for all the cerebral energy output that most of us do. Kind of gets you out of your head and just let go of the stress. So I was doing that for a while.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, we'll kind of talk about some of that stuff some more, but I was wondering if you could maybe talk to us about like your marketing role and the kind of position you play, like the stuff that you've worked with us. I really wanted to talk about that as well.
Fantastic. So marketing came up in October of 2023. So I'd been here for a little while doing some teaching, and that role came open, and I had done some of that with my fundraising work previously, and I put my hat in the ring, and lo and behold, I got the position, which has been great. And marketing is such a personal endeavor, in that when I have been in this role, and especially now, when you believe in something, you just cannot help but talk about it, promote it, share it with people. So I get to work with Dean Viktorovich and help put together our stories. I'm working on a newsletter right now. There's every different direction. There's social media, there's newsletters, there's all kinds of articles for the university overall. But there's also events that need to be planned and executed. And for example, we just came through the Women in Business event that happened early March. We just came through the Women in Business event that happened in early March, and it was a sellout. It's just the second year we've been doing it, but it was so well received, and we had student involvement, which is one of my favorite things that I see our dean helping promote is, if students can do it, let's give them the experience. It's hands-on learning. So we had videographers there, and we had volunteers that were helping put that together. But it was such a success that we have our first sponsor on board for 2025 because they were in the event and realized, I got to be part of this. So when you are also holistically putting things together in a way that people love it, feel included, and want to be part of, then things market themselves. So I do really love that. And I think I'm still learning how everything at College of Business and Economics even works, and all the different departments, the amazing instructors and the amazing students and professors and faculty. And it's just everywhere you look, there's more amazing things when you open every door. And so part of this first year in this role is really just discovering. Like, it wasn't that long ago I realized we had a podcast. Good job, you guys.
Thank you.
And so now I can speak from firsthand experience. And I think that sort of firsthand experience learning is the best way I learn. And so getting to be a part of this, I can really promote it as well and see if we can help get more listeners involved and as part of our audience. So it's... I think the discovery process is really the first part of that, and I'm loving it.
Yeah. Connor and I went to the Women in Business, the networking night, and we thought it was great. We had a great time.
Yeah. I mean, like the speakers that were there and just like, I mean, I know that was sort of like a before kind of like just kind of meet everyone first and then kind of segue into the actual event. But yeah, no, I totally agree with Landon. It was kind of a nice moment just to see the amount of people that were there in the first place. And also just getting to meet all these new people and getting to talk with these individuals. It's like, I went with one of our other friends and it was, I mean, she was very impressed. She was very impressed with everything that you guys had set out.
Well, thank you. And you know, I just want to, I'm so glad you brought that up because it's not just women. And so women and advocates of women and all genders and everyone in between, welcome to be a part of these things. And so I thank you for being there. And that networking night, the night before, it is kind of an on-ramp for the next day, but it's a little bit of a different feel. So yeah, thank you. There's a lot of planning that goes into those things for sure. And all the wrap up and learning. And we have the other thing that's really great. And again, this is a unique piece for this year's event is we captured like TED Talks, the speakers that were presenting at the conference on Friday. And so for some of our leadership leadership courses and that kind of thing, there's wonderful content from bona fide industry leaders that can be piped into the classroom or online courses or that kind of thing. So we're learning and innovating our way into access to living data, instead of stuff that's dusty textbooks somewhere kind of thing.
I think even just speaking to that, I know one of the first meetings that we had talking to each other, I think this also goes back to what you were saying about kind of having a more holistic view of things like that. The way that you changed a newsletter to good news, I thought that was such a clever and I think just very smart way to change, just a minor adjustment. Because I feel like a newsletter, I mean, people don't love newsletters, but at the same time, they're a very useful tool. I mean, for people that, whether they're within the college or they're alumni or whatever it is, they can kind of see what's going on. And by just changing the label to good news, I think off the bat, I would assume that would make more people more likely to read what is actually part of the newsletter.
Well, thank you. And I feel the same way about newsletters. So that's why, how can I intrigue people to click to try something different? So thank you for that. And just all the ideas. You know, I love the input and even readers, listeners to podcasts, all that kind of stuff like that. That's how we continue to evolve and grow is when we learn from the environment around us. So that's really a fun part of what I get to do, too. And I know there's so much information. And for sure, for students, you have a lot of information that you're required to go through, let alone socials and the stuff for during your downtime or for entertainment. And so if you're just another boring thing people have to get through, then forget that. Yeah, so that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seems like you take like a very creative approach to different problems and you already have here at the university. You mentioned the newsletter. How are some other ways that you've been able to take the experience from Big Idea Zoo and your previous experiences and apply it to what you're doing here at the university?
I love this question. I think one of my favorite things, so I directly report to the dean and she's fairly new in her role as well. And so as she's encountering and working through concepts and ideas, I will have conversations. So I meet with her once a week and we go over projects and the vision and what's needed. And sometimes we'll be grappling with something and an idea. And so then I'll go away and back to my home and maybe I'm walking Winnie, my little dog, or doing something. And all of a sudden, boom, it'll just come to me as I know what to do. I see a picture. And so I just run to go find my sketchbook or my drawing tablet, put it together, quickly kind of color and add things in, and then I'll pop it over to our dean. And my favorite is when she goes, that's it, I want to use that. And so I get to find that creative, which that's just a creative muscle I guess I've had, or a brain cell that connects to another one in there somehow, has just been part of the way my system works. And I know to watch for it. So when I hear something and I'll think, okay, I think I see a pattern, or maybe these things could be connected. And I've had to learn to sit with feeling overwhelmed. Because if I'm trying to sort everything out and make sense of it and fit it in a category now, then I am probably cutting myself short. So if there's some overwhelming ideas that are feeling like there's something to this, and maybe there's some other in another category, if I just will be patient with it and give it a little time, it'll usually come together in a picture. And then to get to share it, and then a lot of times there's iterations. Okay, I think we've got something there, but let's add this in or take that away. And so—
Oh yeah, I mean, you make a good point. It creates a good starting point just by having a picture. And then it's like, I mean, hearing you describe this, I think very much I am also a visual type of person, because there will be times where my mom will tell me, oh, we're remodeling the bathroom, we're going to add this and this. And I'd be like, I have no idea what that looks like. I don't know what that means. But just like, and then she'll send me pictures. I'll be like, okay, this, this, this. And it's like, great. Then it's like you have a base point, you know where to go from there. And I think especially with what you're doing, that totally makes sense. That totally makes sense in my mind.
Yay.
Yeah. And I can imagine like the dean or other people in leadership positions are probably bombarded with documents and emails, written stuff. And so they're probably like kind of tired of it.
For sure. I mean, I think many people get really tired of page after page of text, right? I mean, so I'm one of them. And it was a self-help tool. That's actually how I got started. I was in grad school and there was so many volumes of things we had to read and read. And I thought, okay, yes, I like to underline and highlight, but I began to realize that I really could take the learning in when I would do the reading, make my notes, whatever, and then an image would evolve somehow. And I'd be like, and so then I would scratch it down and color it in and do that kind of thing. And so I actually partly, you know, drawing through my experience with my brother when we were kids, I think it came through into my grad school experience and drawing images. And I realized something. If I'm having trouble understanding something, I know I cannot draw it, even if it's a weird mind map or some kind of odd looking gangly thing. But once I start to understand something, if I can start to draw it, it's almost like I have a conversation with the image itself. And that's when I started being able to get those concepts through and stop being as overwhelmed with volumes of text and all this stuff to read. And then I'd have people go, Lori, could I have your notes and could they please be in color? And I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I'm onto something here. And so, yeah, it was really because of the overwhelm, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it would be a great way to, you know, help yourself stand out. How would someone like us or like a student go about learning how to present information and ideas more creatively?
Yes, I think needs to be an organic process to each person. So one of the things in one of the courses I teach, I talk about the learning style. So our five senses are really the indicators of how we make sense of the world. So for me, sight is my main way of making sense. If I can see something, or that's how I tend to know something. Also sound. So a lot of people are auditory. So our podcast listeners are likely doing something else right now. But that auditory message coming through is somehow helping them get the information. So for me, when I see things, color, brightness, all those things matter. For an auditory person, if I have a tone of voice that sets somebody on edge, no matter what I have to say, they're not going to be able to hear it. Rhythm and pacing and intensity, sometimes adding the underlying music, that kind of thing. So visual or auditory, there are people that are olfactory. All of us know people with a sensitive sense of smell, and you can hear sometimes in language, like somebody will go, that smells like a problem, or I smell a rat. You'll hear people say that, or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then even olfactory, which is our taste, sense of taste. And I know someone who, when he's encountering something new, he's not sure what it is, and he's an adult. He licks a little, like if there's a spill or something, he's like, oh, I know what that is. And so that's how he makes sense of the world. And hopefully it's not like strychnine or something like that. But and then the fifth sense, which is kinesthetic, that sense of feel. And so, and I think many of us have a combination of those, right? Because all of our senses work together at all times. So once I see something, boom, it goes right to a kinesthetic experience. Like I can like feel like either chills go up my spine or tingling in the soles of my feet. I'm like, oh, I know what to do. And so that's what I would say, that as you are in your learning processes, notice the kinds of things that you're drawn to. If you love music, for example, or a podcast, maybe more so than watching stuff, you might be more auditory. And so maybe instead of visually sketching your notes, maybe there's some kind of audio sound. Maybe there's a bing or a click or some other sort of thing that helps you remember things or memorize things. And it could be an auditory cue. You know, maybe you need to bake an apple pie and smell it every time you're trying to recall a certain thing. But it's kind of like learning what is already part of who you are. And so I know even as a yoga teacher, that's very kinesthetic, all the movements. I was really nervous because I thought if I don't see all the yoga moves in the right order, I'm going to be lost as a yoga teacher. But I drew stick figures. Actually, and that's how I learned it. But if you're auditory and you're trying to teach a new kind of way of doing something, maybe you're designing your app, just hit record on your phone and run your own little voiceover for what it is you need to do, because that's probably how you'll recall it best. Other things like that. So the big three are really visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. The other two are a little more unusual, but we all know people who are more that way. So those would be a couple of the suggestions I would have.
Yeah.
And trying it out, you know.
Yeah, it seems like it's important to tailor it not only to yourself, but also to the people you're communicating with.
For sure. And about 80% of humans are visual learners, so, or at least some combination with the visual. And so when I learned that, I realized, okay, this is going to be a really good shared language. And I found that it's amazing between multicultural groups as well. So just because I speak English does not mean my audience does. So how can a visual story then be transformed in a way that can also lift a lot of that communication? Because a lot of times we think it has to be words, not necessarily. And I've been able to work with people who don't speak English. And I was recently with a indigenous group of tribal leaders in Alaska that were talking about climate change, and many of whom were in this conference that did not speak English as a first language. And I was part of the conference drawing pictures of what the keynote speakers were talking about as I was putting those up. And here were people of all ages and all speaking abilities able to see an iceberg or a caribou or pine trees or different things that were undergoing change and without all the words. And so I love it because I feel like it's multilingual in a way as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just want to ask. So I actually watched one of the videos that you had on your LinkedIn, the squirrel, like with the budgeting and with the acorns. And I was watching it and I was like, this is great. I just want to ask, what is sort of like the process? What is your role in that? What do you do and how do you like work with the people around you? Like, just kind of break us through.
Sure. I love talking about animation. So that one was for a school district, and I'd been working with them for a while. They had a kind of a tricky message to deliver to their constituents, so parents, but also voters who often vote on school levies and taxes and all that kind of stuff. So in the state of Washington, this district had received funding, and everybody thought, hallelujah, we don't have to give one more penny. They're good to go for years. And the finance people said, we need to help make sure this message gets out that we did get some money, but we're squirreling it away. That's why we did a squirrel, so that we are able to cover expenses down the road. So there was a lot that went in behind the scenes. There's a little young boy's voice, and his name was Malcolm. He was in second grade, and he was actually in the school district. So I talked with the staff there, and we decided together that a child telling this story would also make it a little easier to hear. And so in back and forth, the team got together and said, we've got to have a message. So they called me in, and I've been working with them for probably 8 years or so. And I met with them, and the first thing we did was a mind map, visual, messy brainstorm session. So I just listened to people talk and then took notes just like I did in grad school. Here it is. What about this? And then people would add and subtract, and we would watch for patterns and connect things. And pretty soon we had enough of a baseline to say, we have a message. The next thing with animation is it's one of the most expensive mediums to tell your story. So you've got to have a budget for that, which of course finance people were like, okay, we're on board with that. So now you have 15 or 20 minutes worth of information with a 60-second budget. So now you have to start really getting serious about what's important and how to synthesize messaging and create less words. And this is where I love the fact that animation, because it's so visual, can do a lot of that heavy lifting of meaning where the words run along the track at the same time. So I just worked with the team and helped identify the main key points. And then I usually will tell customers, I know you got a lot of information. We're not going to be able to fit into 60 seconds. So one other idea is I can always do an infographic that somebody can download. So I love to leave the audience wanting more, not having them go, oh, that's enough. Pause, get out of here. So I worked with the team to put the script together. And so back and forth, and I do the whole thing for Big Idea Zoo. I contract, I work with the customer, we wrote the script. Once the script is approved, next is the storyboard. And so this is where we went through multiple characters, and they really wanted the squirrel. And at that time, my daughter was still living at home. So she's like, Mom, let me help you do the character development. And she was helping with the stylizing. And we did riff a little bit off of Ice Age. Do you guys remember seeing that movie? And is it Scrat? That one squirrel has a big eye, a little. So he was part of our inspiration. I love that movie, the original. But then I would do the storyboard. And storyboarding is different for every different company, but I found that since I was also the illustrator and the one creating the artwork, it was just as easy for me to do a what you see is what you get right on the storyboard. So the storyboard I have has those exact characters, because by the time I do quick sketches, then I'm almost done anyway. So I thought, well, why don't I show the customer what the end product basically will be like? So then I put the storyboard together. Once we get approval on that, then in this case, for the squirrel video, I worked with Malcolm and I took in my whole sound recording equipment to the school district and hoped that the rooms beside us would be quiet. And he recorded, and he was a pro. I made him a little trophy with his name on it afterwards, because he won a contest to get to do this, and he wants to be a voiceover talent, and I have no doubt he will be. So then I have all those parts and pieces, and then usually I will give a couple music samples. So now all the assets are together for the animation process. And then I thankfully release those over to the Big Idea Zoo animator. And he magically reads all the instructions on the storyboard, puts it all together, brings it to life, puts it in motion. And it's just the first time I got to see a story that I had envisioned in motion. It was unbelievable. And so then that helped inform me as I would put these together to watch for what would flow into the next thing. Because the first few times I did this, there were some big jumps in between scenes. And so my animator, he's awesome. His name's Aaron. I'm sure he was like, I wonder what kind of transition I'm going to have to make. And so I began to learn how to weave the stories into a little bit of a smoother flow so that it made just a more seamless story. So once that's done, the production goes over to the final customer, and we hopefully get their approval by then. And because I do it very transparently, where what you see is what you get, we usually are, if we miss something, we change it. But if you get clear to the end of an animation and someone says, you know, I was thinking we should have had the script say this, that's a big timeout. We have to go now write an addendum. That's an increase in budget and scope of work and your timeline. So the contracting process was a big learning curve for me as well, but I've learned how to put that all together. And speaking of wordy, I mean, you cannot simplify that and put it in a picture because you have to have it all spelled out for the attorneys, right? So that's my long-winded answer for that's kind of the animation process. And so for a 60-second video, it was somewhere usually between about 8 weeks because mm-hmm. the animation itself, once we get all those assets together, it's about a 3 to 4 week process for the animator to put it all together. Hundreds of hours. If I did it, it'd be thousands, but because all the tweaking and the ways that he puppets things, and it's magical.
That was great.
You see why I have to draw pictures? I talk so much. I don't know. I'm like, if I could just draw you a picture, you could.
No, I mean, that's why I think it honestly kind of helps. The fact that I've seen the video is it's almost like I can visualize exactly what you're saying. The fact that within the video itself, it's almost like you're moving left to right, and you're following a squirrel, and it's just as you're talking, and as you mentioned, Malcolm, as he's describing what's going on, you see a squirrel that's moving, and it's like, oh, the budget, oh, the squirrel's collecting acorns, oh, you're going to be losing the acorns, year after year, and it's like, but in my head, I can see the squirrel moving from the left side of the screen to the right, and the scene around it sort of changes, and it's just, yeah, honestly, just a great way to show what the issue was, what was actually happening. And I just have to say I think you did a great job kind of depicting what was going on for people. Even the child could understand it. And then more importantly, the parents and the people that would be voting on the issue, of course, as well.
Well, thank you. And guess what? We actually won a National Merit Award for that video.
No way.
Wow. So, yeah, that was a big celebration for the team for sure.
That's pretty cool. So let's say you walk into the boardroom or the conference room and, the people are throwing out their ideas. How do you determine what type of learner their audience is? Like if you need to emphasize the visual or the audio or something else?
So the ultimate end audience,
yes,
for a piece?
Yeah.
That's a great question too. And I think you can't always really know. So what we knew is the audience was going to be parents of a lot of the students that were in the class, voters who sometimes didn't have school-age kids. And so they were maybe not so interested in taxes being continued or raised. So I think it kind of goes back to the five senses. And so what I love to do is find ways to bring in as many sensory hints along the way. And so the movement, of course, is a kinesthetic kind of thing. We have the voice of the child, which that, you could probably say, are you trying to manipulate your audience? And here's the truth. I do think what you want to be able to do is get the information into the heads of your audience, then let them decide. But if they immediately are tuning you out, then the message doesn't even have a chance. So there's some auditory implications there as well, but also the sound effects that come in, Aaron is awesome. He'll just add a little pop or different things there that will appeal a little bit, but it's kind of when it all comes together. And of course the whole thing is visual. So finding some great colors, and by the way, those are all in their school brand guidebook. So I do watch for fonts, the brand guidebook, and all of the colors and different things so that it is in alignment with the marketing and the branding that a district's already doing. Until we have smell-o-vision or whatever it's called, I can't really bring that in, or taste, but you know what? With AI and all the virtual reality stuff coming in, I'm telling you, we are that close to having a full five-sensory kind of message delivery, and I'll be ready, but I just don't want to gain weight over it, so that's the one request I have. Yeah, but so to answer your question, I think, is try to hit on as many of those as possible in order to make it seem real. And the truth is, I mentioned, I'm kind of a kid. I have the world's biggest imagination. And so I love being able to imagine something, and all the senses come into it for me. And so when I do that, which is just something I've just been that way my whole life, then I can figure out how to invite people in. Now, not everybody's going to like the same things, or maybe they're going to be like, ew, what are you doing? And that's okay too, right? But to find some of that. And I have found The other gateway to people's attention is just a little humor. So making squirrels with one tooth hanging out a little differently than the other, or funny eyes, or, you know, just adding a little lightheartedness in there can help people take in information. And the other piece I love about it, and I learned this at Boeing, we were putting together policies and procedures and trying to give feedback that was very hard for some managers to hear. And so instead of having real people and photos of actual situations, which is very visceral, firsthand, like this is intense, we did do some things with like stick figures, drawn characters, or that kind of thing. Because what happens is it moves the mind back into a, oh, that's out there. I don't have to take this so personally. So now I might let this message in. So I did a lot of that kind of work because we can laugh at somebody else, or obviously those people have a problem. I'm not sure I would ever do the same thing. And then later we can sometimes subliminally let it in. So that was another piece that, because I did some employee training for a while and helping put policies and procedures into implementation inside organizations. And so if you can use that third person or like an animated character instead of a real life person that might be so close to home, your audience just shuts down. I found that that can be like a superpower as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Lori. This has been very insightful just to hear like your process. And I mean, the Big Idea Zoo and everything that you run on that side, and also your role here. I just want to say, yeah, Landon and I, thank you very much for coming on here. And I'm sure our listeners appreciate all the great. I mean, I would like to say, our listeners, please go check out Big Idea Zoo. I mean, I think just us talking about it doesn't do it justice for what Lori's created. So I just want to thank you very much. And yeah, listeners, we'll be coming out with more podcasts in the future. Lori, if there's anything else you'd like to say, I'd say please go for it.
I think this is a fantastic format. You guys are killer hosts. So thank you for inviting me to be part of this. And I just hope more people are able to be in the room with you. You're great interviewers. So it's a great experience. Thank you so much.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you very much.